the second I land, I get my rental car and I drive to my very first meeting, whether it's with a broker, with the property manager, or viewing a property, whatever it might be. But I get there and I do that, and I do that as late as I possibly can, as late as people want to meet with me. I try to book dinner with people if they're willing. However late I can go, I do. Any downtime I have, or when I'm done meeting with people, I'm driving the city. I'm going through neighborhoods. I never take the freeways. Anytime I go from one meeting to the next, if I can make it there in time, I'm going to drive the back roads and not the freeways.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me today is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Todd. Weather's great, family's healthy, business is going. So yeah, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic, thank you. We are going to be going over some more out-of-state investing today. But before we get started, John, anything new, anything you want to share?
Just, you know, grinding away at the different aspects of my business, analyzing deals, meeting people, looking for people who want to sell their property. So just normal day-to-day real estate stuff.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, I got a couple things. One is I'm working on a large apartment building acquisition right now. I'm trying to get this deal done, and it's going to be seller financing.
Okay.
So if it gets done, it's going to be a fun story to share, because I think a lot of people, most people think that you can't do seller financing, period, in a hot market. And most people think you can't do seller financing on a large apartment building. So I like to prove people wrong. And so this will be a fun story if I can get this thing done. So I've done seller financing now on I've done it on two of my last five apartment acquisitions. I've done seller financing options on. So it can be done, and there's plenty of reasons to do it, and there's reasons not to do it too. If you can get traditional financing at better rates, go traditional financing. But sometimes you can get you can't get traditional financing. In this case, this apartment building, I wouldn't be able to get traditional financing. I'd have to go with a bridge loan. And bridge loans are just really expensive. And they're expensive up front. They're expensive on the back end. They're expensive in the middle. So if I can get seller financing, it'll save me lots of money to where when I'm done stabilizing it, I can get permanent financing for way cheaper. So
So in your experience, has the seller financing been just a portion of the whole purchase price or like a, or?
Yeah. So you can do both, but in the deals I've set up, so the two that I've executed on and this third one, they'll all be seller financing with way less than 20% down. The one I executed was 10% down. The other one I executed was 5% down. And this one that I'm executing will be like 7% or so down.
Oh, that's
now,
great.
If I can get it done, of course. Now, the 5% down was just a short term. It was a 1 year loan with an option of a 1 year extension, but the extension was going to cost me, I think, one or two points. And then our interest rate was going to go from like 5% up to 6% or something like that. I ended up getting it stabilized and got permanent financing on before the year was up. So that did not, go into effect, but that was 5% down. Like I said, 1 year term, it was like 5% interest, based on a 25-year loan. Was that one interest only? I can't remember. The other one was 10% down and we did long-term financing. It's 25-year amortization. It's 5%. It's just a beautiful loan, principal interest only, or principal and interest, I mean. So it's a great loan. It's better. And I got no personal guarantee. So it's a non-recourse. And to close it was almost nothing, because you had to pay for some legal fees to get the contract written up, but you didn't have to pay for any of the, broker fees or that kind of stuff. So
no appraisal.
I did an appraisal because okay. I wanted to, make sure the value was where I thought it would be. Appraisal came in way okay. higher than what I needed it. But, okay. But yeah, you could save an appraisal cost if you wanted to, you wouldn't have to do it. When I do seller financing, I still do some of that stuff. So I still will do an appraisal. I still do a survey on the property. I still do an environmental on the property. I still do, all the due diligence that I would need to do if I'm going to get regular financing, because I want to make sure I can get regular financing in the end.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important if you're going to eventually go to regular financing, you want to make sure you can get it. You don't want to get stuck. And you want to make sure you can sell it too. So,
So
the other thing I want to talk about is dealing with contractor right now. And it's just, when you deal with contractors, you got to make sure that, you're being treated the way you should be treated. And I'm not talking like they're a meanie to you, but I'm talking about the charging you right. And I've got a contractor right now that's trying to charge me and he doesn't get it. Like he doesn't get why I'm not okay with it. He's charging me 50%. Contractor fee, and he doesn't see it that way. All he sees it as, his cost is $600 or whatever it is, and he is charging me. In this case, it's for each kitchen cabinet, the labor. He's paying out $600 to his guys. $600 is the total that he's paying out. He's charging me $750, but then he's also charging me. So that's 25%. Then he's also charging me 20% on top of that. So in all, that ends up to be 50% that he's charging me on top. And he doesn't get it. What I'm saying, well, look, that doesn't work for me. You can't charge me 50%. Well, I got to make money. Well, I know you got to make money, but you can't charge me 50%. I'm not going to pay that. So you just have to, like, if you don't know any better, you're probably going to pay it, but you've got to try to make sure you understand, what all is going into this and talk some logic to these contractors. Hopefully this guy will understand, cause I like him. I want to continue to use him, but I'm not going to pay a 50% contractor fee.
Yeah. So that experience could come with just doing deals and also just getting different quotes or different experiences with different contractors.
Yeah, getting different quotes is good too. I want to get this project off the ground. I don't want to be messing around with different quotes. I know how much it should cost. Mm-hmm. That's my experience. If you don't have experience though, you should be getting three or four quotes and get prices and make sure you're getting, it's funny. You'll go at, when you get some quotes from contractors. I mean, people say get three quotes. I suggest if you don't know what you're doing, I suggest get like 9 or 10, honestly. I'm not joking. Like, get a lot of quotes, because if you don't know what you're doing, you'll be shocked at the difference of these quotes. You'll have one quote that'll be, you know, let's say it's a full kitchen top to bottom remodel. You have one quote that's $5,000. You have another quote that's $25,000. You have a quote that's, you know, $7,000. You have a quote, and they'll be just all over the board. Even for like a simple furnace, I get quotes everywhere from, you know, $2,000 all the way up to like $4,500 or $5,000 or even higher than that. It's like, what is going on? Why are these quotes all over the board? And don't just go for the lowest quote. Make sure if you're going to go at the lowest quote, they actually know what they're doing. So ask them questions about it. If you don't know how to ask them questions, do some research on what they're doing, or find somebody that does know the right questions to ask. You know, make sure they understand what they're doing and everything that's involved with it. So if they're doing a kitchen remodel and it's in an old, let's say, early 1900s built house, make sure you ask them questions about, you know, they're installing with crooked walls and with plaster, and the plumbing's outdated and that kind of stuff. Make sure they're taking all that into account, because the last thing you want is that $5,000 quote to all of a sudden become a $9,000 quote.
Yeah.
$9,000 price.
Right. Yeah, that's the worst thing, when you've agreed to a price, you've mentally gotten yourself prepared to pay something, and then the contractor gets in there and says, well, I didn't know this and I didn't know that, and well, it's really going to cost 50% more or whatever.
Yeah, and a lot of those errors should be avoided. And so if you're asking those questions, you might find out that the guy that gave you a $7,000 quote, he's actually the cheapest, not the guy that gave you a $5,000 quote. So if you know the questions to ask, if you don't know the questions to ask, find somebody that does know the questions to ask, and arm yourself with enough quotes and ask those contractors, like, detailed to go through it. Don't just email them, get on the phone and call them and talk to them about what they're doing. And you're going to get an education, and you're going to figure out which one's best.
People these days, we do so much by email and texting but you can lose so much of the communication if you don't actually talk to somebody, or maybe in some cases meet them in person.
You know what? And contractors, oftentimes, and now this is just a generalized rule, but they don't want to email. They don't email. A lot of contractors aren't tech savvy. There's a reason they're contractors. They don't work in the tech world because they're not tech savvy and they don't like tech. They would rather go into a house and rip out a kitchen and make it nice. That's their thing. Their thing is not to go on to email and social media and stuff like that. So they'd rather talk to you on the phone.
And that's not to, you know, put down their intelligence.
I'm not saying they're dumb. They don't like it.
Yeah. Even if they're very competent and do like it during the day.
And they're busy.
They're busy at job sites getting their hands dirty. So
exactly.
It's hard to type out a long email or read a long email if you're actually doing work.
Yep. And they can spend 5 minutes on the phone and tell you 10 times as much.
Right.
On the phone. So, well, cool. Let's get into today's topic a little bit, which is more on out-of-state investing.
Yeah, definitely. So last week we talked about kind of identifying a good market and what things to look for as far as demographics, as far as growth and population, jobs, all that type of stuff. So now we've kind of narrowed down the list a little bit, or at least we know what we're looking for. So what are the things, some of the prep work things that we can do at this stage in the game?
Yeah. So John, prep work is the right word. You've got to make sure you are preparing yourself to invest out of state, because it's way too easy just to go on I could go on the internet right now and look at, let's say I'm going to invest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I could go on to auction.com, for instance, and I could go on to auction.com and find a duplex on auction.com for probably $30,000. I'm sure I could go right now and find something that I could buy maybe for $50,000, okay, duplex. But if I don't know anything about that area, if I don't know anything about, you know, what's going on in that market, is that $50,000 duplex a good deal just because it's cheap? Maybe in my market, they're going to cost $150,000 or $250,000 or $550,000. But is that a good deal or is that a terrible deal? Do I really want to buy that deal? So you might get excited and be on LoopNet and find a, you know, 50-unit apartment that's selling for $40,000 a door. Well, that's a fantastic deal because in my market, they sell for $200 a door. But again, you've got to make sure you understand what you're doing and what you're actually looking at. So prep work is really, really important. So I would say there's a couple, you know, key things on prep work. It's all about the research. You can do it before you ever touch your feet in the market. But then you've got to make sure that you actually go to the market. So decide on a market or two. Okay. You can't just be out there looking at you know, 30 markets and doing detailed research. So last week, John, I think we covered all my key points on looking for markets. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So last week, if you are listening to this episode, you didn't listen to last week's episode, go, you know, stop right now and go on to last week's episode and then come back to this. Because we talked about how to, you know, look at those markets. So once you've decided, okay, these are a couple markets that I like to look at, even if you've got like five on your list, just go, I'm going to pick these two, okay, or this one is even better. I'm going to pick this one market. And then you need to research, and then you need to find out where, in detail, we've already done preliminary, but in detail, where is this market trending? By that, I mean, where are people moving in and where are people moving out of? You know, does the government have a comprehensive plan? Read that, find it on their website, find out what areas are expanding, find out where people are going. Okay. So that's number one. Any questions on that?
No, that makes total sense. I mean, without a plan, you know, if you're not growing, then you're dying, and the government has a lot of control over that. I mean, what resources they're putting in, how they're allocating the tax funds. So yeah, definitely a great, important thing to look at.
Government does a lot of changes within a market. They can make a market go from, you know, more depressed to very, very good. Government, nonprofits, and businesses as well. But there's a market in Cincinnati called Over the Rhine, and that was back in, I think, 2006-ish, 5-ish, somewhere around there. It was the most dangerous neighborhood. I think it was voted the most dangerous neighborhood in the country. And right now, today, it's nowhere near that list. Now, there's still crime that happens. There's still parts of it that are blighted, but there's also other parts of it that are really, really nice. You go down there and there's, you know, well-to-do people walking around without a care in the world, because it's a nice enough area where they can do that. And that was due in large part by the city stepping in and some nonprofits stepping in and some businesses stepping in, but making those positive changes in that area. So had you invested in that area back in, let's say, 2010, you've done really, really, really well in there. Now could you invest in there and do well? I still think you can. I think changes are still happening, but it's, you know, it's a lot less now. So finding those areas before they happen is really, really powerful.
Yeah, and that change probably happened a lot by the government finally taking notice, you know, the local city, local council members, local police, and maybe city inspections, and actually, you know, taking action against slumlords or against crime.
Yeah.
All that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, and I wasn't there for the whole transformation. You know, I started investing in the Cincinnati area and looking at the Cincinnati area back in 2016. So it already had really transitioned a lot since then. But yeah, I mean, they definitely stepped in and did a lot. So, and that happens all over. It's not just Cincinnati. I mean, that's happened in our market in Minneapolis. You know, look at Northeast Minneapolis, look at lots of parts of St. Paul, and that's happened everywhere. So, the other thing is knowing, you know, you got to know what areas are good or bad. I talked earlier about going onto auction.com and finding this duplex for $50,000 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and doing that. It looks like a great deal, but if it's in the worst area of the city, is it really a great deal? It looks great on paper, but you know, if your tenants are not able to pay your rent or your manager is getting shot every time they go there to collect rent, well, that's maybe not the best deal. Maybe you overpaid by 40 grand, you know? So I would suggest getting to know those markets, you know, going online. You can just type in what are the dangerous areas of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You get a lot of good information that way. You can look at the police reports, Trulia.com. They've got a heat map. So if you type in an address, it'll give you a heat map. Basically if it's dangerous or not. Now, all that stuff needs to be taken with a grain of salt, but you can get good idea of, you know, if it's good or bad. I would suggest printing out a map of the city and color coding it or grading it. And, this is all, again, before you go to the market. Now, once you go to the market, you'll be able to then look at your map and go, oh, maybe this area isn't so bad. You spent a day there. You've looked at several properties there. Oh, I gave it a C, but everybody's telling me this is really more like a B minus area. It's trending upwards. So then you change it a little bit, but at least you've got your preliminary grading on that.
Yeah. And things can change quickly. So it's really important to have somebody that knows the area, that lives in the area, that can keep you updated on what's going on.
Yeah. So when I bought my first house, my wife and I bought our first house. We bought it in a neighborhood in St. Paul, kind of the Crocus Hill. I think the neighborhood's called Summit University neighborhood, but anyways, a neighborhood right by a street called Selby. And Selby Dale used to be one of the most dangerous places in the city of St. Paul. My dad grew up in St. Paul and, you know, grew up during the whatever, a lot of the, where there was a lot of racial tension. And Selby Dale, he said if you were white, you didn't go to Selby Dale. It was, and it was a very impoverished area. And obviously that was different times. But you know, now today Selby Dale is a really nice area.
Yeah,
I was talking to an agent, and even she grew up in that area, closer to Summit Avenue, which has always kind of been a little nicer, but she would take the bus through and past that Selby Dale area. And she said every morning she would look out her window and she'd see the homeless people with newspapers over them, you know, laying on the streets in that area. So times have changed, but when I bought there, I remember still we had several people that were my parents' age and even younger that would go, oh boy, you don't want to live there. You know, that's a terrible area.
Right.
So don't always take the locals' word for it.
Right. Those impressions can stay in there for a long time, even though the area has changed. So.
Yeah. 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 That was a long time ago. You know, it started improving in the mid 90s. And really has improved now. That's been a long time and people still have that impression. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, one person or one type of professional that you, we've talked about this many times, but getting to know local real estate brokers, because you know, they're doing business in the area, so they can know, you know, what's happening real time.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Local real estate brokers, you know, make sure you're calling them and emailing them and communicating your expectations with them and use them as a resource. You know, they can help you understand the areas. They will be able to tell you probably as good or better than anybody if an area is a A area, B area, C area, D area. They might have a little bias. They might, you know, maybe they list a lot of properties in this, you know, C minus area, so they call it a C plus area. But you'll kind of find out through talking to more than just one of them, you know, what areas are what, and through talking to property managers and then actually visiting. And a lot of them have good research too on their website. A lot of them have great research on their website. I was looking at Memphis, Tennessee for a little while, and there was a broker there. Shoot, I can't remember his name. Anyways, he had his website had so much information on it. It was unreal. You almost didn't even have to do research. You just go onto his website because he had already done all the research you needed. So, you know, just Woodyard, Steve Woodyard was the gentleman's name. So if you're looking in Memphis, Tennessee, look up Steve Woodyard. And he's got just oodles of information. It's unreal. So they can be very, very valuable resources for sure.
Yeah. All right. So then continuing on with our prep work of getting to know the area and the local people, property managers are another professional that we need to be in communication with.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, you know, talk to, you know, 3 to 4 managers, get to know them, you know, figure out which ones you like their philosophies, you like what they're going to be doing, ask them the questions that we've already talked about. So go back to podcasts. Do you remember the number? Podcast number right around 40-ish, where we talk about managers. I should have that. But get to know them and learn about the areas. They're going to be another great resource. They're going to be able to tell you if it's an A area, B area, so on. And they're going to be able to tell you what properties, what areas have opportunity and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, for sure.
Ideally, maybe they have another property they manage in the same exact neighborhood and can just tell you really real life experience about what's going on in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you should be finding managers that do have properties within a fairly short radius, because I think it's going to be a lot more efficient for them. If their properties are all on the other side of town, I definitely would shy away from using a property manager with properties all over town or in a totally different area, because I think they're going to have a difficult time managing, and they're not going to know the vacancy rates. They're not going to know the rental rates and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Okay. So then after we've established kind of our on the ground team, you know, we're going to want to visit the city and confirm what we've learned.
Yep.
What do you do on a site visit or a city visit? What's your day-to-day look like when you're going through that?
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, we've picked our city. We've done our research, we're all set and we want to start buying. So like you said, we need to visit the city. We need to meet with the people that we've been talking to. So we need to meet with our property managers that we've talked to. We need to meet with the brokers you've talked to. You need to meet with, if you've talked to mortgage brokers and attorneys, closing attorneys and accountants and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes you maybe don't need to meet with everyone, but meet with the important ones, the ones that you think are going to really help you along the way. The brokers and the property managers are musts. And it's nice to, it's for me, it's nice to, I like to say, you know, maybe a broker has a property they've got listed on the market, or maybe it's an off market deal, maybe it's not a deal that you're going to buy, and they know that, but it's nice to, I prefer meeting them at a property because it's okay meeting them at their office, but I like to see them at the property, get to know the town a little bit better. The more time they're willing to spend with you, the better, of course. Just getting to know them, getting to know the area. I've found it helpful too to be at their office if they're willing to sit down with a map and go through areas with you. That's been very helpful. I've had several brokers that have asked to do that, and they have, and they've highlighted certain areas, and they've talked about what's going on in the town. And I've had a few brokers. This doesn't happen very often, but I've had a few brokers that have popped me in their car and driven me around, and showed me areas I want to be invested in, and driven past properties that they've sold or that are coming on the market, stuff like that. So that's awesome if they're willing to do that. That doesn't happen very often. But let's talk about we arrive at the city. So I try to arrive at the city on the first plane flight that'll come in the morning. And the second I land, I get my rental car and I drive to my very first meeting, whether it's with a broker, with the property manager, or viewing a property, whatever it might be. But I get there and I do that, and I do that as late as I possibly can, as late as people want to meet with me. I try to book dinner with people if they're willing. However late I can go, I do. Any downtime I have, or when I'm done meeting with people, I'm driving the city. I'm going through neighborhoods. I never take the freeways. Anytime I go from one meeting to the next, if I can make it there in time, I'm going to drive the back roads and not the freeways. Because I want to get to know the town. I want to see areas in the light. So I go until it's dark, and I actually go even past when it's dark, because I'll drive through areas when it's dark just to kind of get the feeling of the areas. So I'm basically working from sun up to sundown, and then even more. I mean, I'm processing, I'm prepping for the next day, all that kind of stuff. So when I go to a, and you can do whatever you want, but when I go to a market, and this is whether I know the market or not, like I'm going to be going in 2 weeks to visit some of my properties, to look at some properties. For me, it's not a vacation. I'm going to be there, and I've been to the city before, but I'm going to go from sun up to sundown, and I'm going to go until I crash. And when I get home, I can sleep. When I'm there, I'm going nonstop. I still sleep, but I go nonstop. I'm intense. I had one of my investors or prospect investors. He met me the last time I was out of town, and he met me, and I was just going nonstop. And he's like, "You told me you're going to go nonstop, but you really meant it, didn't you?" I'm like, "Yeah, I told you we're not going to." I'm like, "It's not going to be fun. I told you." I go. So it's not a vacation for me. If I'm out of town away from my family, I'm serious about it.
Yeah. So as you're going all around, you keep a journal with you, or you just kind of take mental notes of everything you see, or how do you keep all the information?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of both, right? So I'm not writing while I drive, cause I try to not crash. But yeah, I've always got a notebook next to me. I've got my, phone. If I can pull over and take a picture or whatever, or make a note, from at a stoplight, and I can make a quick note.
And what would those types of notes be? Like, I see new construction here, or this place looks really run down, or.
Yeah. Anything that I think is valuable to my information. I mean, if I'm driving by an area and it's, let's say it's in the south part of town, south of whatever, I-694, and, East Highway, whatever, 52, then I'm going to write down, like six new buildings being built, or lots of new commercial development, or whatever it is. That way I can note that, and then I can go back to it and research it. Maybe that's a drive I do in the afternoon, because I want to see what's going on. You know, I go there after I'm done with all my meetings, and I really drive around and I go, okay, what's going on? Is it being overbuilt, or is there opportunity here? Are there some apartments? Maybe there's some newer apartments being built and some newer commercial being built. And I can see there's like three or four apartment complexes that are older and run down in this kind of new area that's being built up. Well, that screams opportunity to me, because now I can potentially buy those apartment buildings, as long as you're on the right side of the tracks. I can potentially buy those apartment buildings and renovate them, and now I've got a good value add opportunity. So I like to see that. You like to see that path of progress. If you can buy in that path of progress, that's very, very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Anytime you can take a building that has one, you know, standard and bring it up to the next standard, that's going to add a lot of value. So if I can add amenities, if I can make it nicer, if I can change the feeling of the building, and I can do that, the area's got to be able to accept it, right? But if I can do that, it's going to add a lot of value.
Yep. One question that's coming to mind right now, I don't know if maybe we should have covered it in the last episode, but how do you consider urban areas versus like inner ring suburbs versus outer ring suburbs? Do you have a sweet spot in all that? Or are you looking at all of the above? Or
yeah, I look at all of the above. I'm looking at where the path of progress is. So the path of progress might be downtown. Or the path of progress might be to the western suburbs, or you know, whatever that might be. Like in the Twin Cities, one of our main paths of progress, and it's been this way for quite some time, is the west and southwest suburbs. And that's going to be the case really still. That's your biggest path of progress. And so buying in those areas is valuable, but also finding out, is there going to be another newer path of progress? And that's what we like to see too, is if we can go into a city and go, okay, the path of progress has been south and southwest, and it's going to continue to be southwest, but this spot over here to the northeast is really starting to grow and expand, and I can see that being another path of progress. That's really valuable because it hasn't quite arrived. So anybody who's in the Twin Cities knows, and it right now today, invest in St. Louis Park. Okay, well, it's been there, done that. You know, sure, can you still maybe make some money there? Yeah, but it's not like you just discovered it. You know, it's right. Been discovered for a long time.
So the problem is if it's been discovered for a long time, it can be more difficult to find
a deal that
makes sense there. So
yeah. But you still don't want to discount that path of progress. Just because it's been there for a long time doesn't mean it's a bad place to invest. Mm-hmm. You still don't want to discount it. So
very good. Well, I think that covers most of what we wanted to today. Do you have some kind of closing comments to wrap it all together here?
Well, you know, I think we'll maybe talk a little bit more out-of-state investing and how we can have success in it. But I think really the biggest success for me, the biggest way you're going to have success is if you do the prep work and make sure you spend plenty of time on that prep work, because I think that's the easiest thing to get caught up. You want to buy a deal now. If you're going to be an investor, you're not going to be an investor until you buy a deal. And most people understand that, but you want to make sure you're being a good and diligent investor as well. So you've got to make sure you do that preliminary research, and it might take you longer than what you want. but that's okay because you want to make sure you have it down. And then make sure you build your team, or at least your supposed team, prior to you going there, because then when you get there, you've got at least a really good start. And maybe some things will change. Maybe you meet with a person and you go, geez, this property manager seemed great on the phone, but they're a mess, man. They are a big mess. One of the biggest things I like to do when I go to a town and I talk to, let's say, ABC Property Management Company, I like to secret shop three or four of ABC Property Management Company's properties that they're managing, or even five or six if I can. So I will do that, and in areas kind of similar to where I'm looking at buying. So I will do that. I will set up some showings for me as a quote-unquote tenant to look at their properties. That way I can see what's going on there. And maybe after doing that, I go, man, every single property I go to from this property management company is just trashy. I really don't want them to manage my properties. Or maybe I go, wow, these guys are doing a fantastic job. I want them to manage. So you'll find out things as you go into the cities, but the more prep work you can do prior is better. The other thing is make sure when you do, after you do go to a city, you continue to communicate and take action. If you're talking to real estate brokers and they've done a good job with you and they've helped you out, make sure you thank them and make sure you're writing offers on their properties or giving them feedback on the ones they're sending you. And then same thing with property managers. You know, they're actually deal resources as well. You can find deals through property management companies, and make sure you thank them and make sure you keep them in the loop. Hey, I wrote three offers this week. We'll see what's going on. Hoping to get one, you know, looking forward to working with you, that type of thing. Because if you're not communicating, you're getting forgotten about. So you just wasted a lot of time and value of going out there. One of the biggest, I think, values about going to a market if you're out of state is meeting the people and getting to know them and them appreciating you, because they get a lot of people that kick tires that are from, you know, wherever, California, New York, Minnesota, it doesn't matter where, but that are from other parts that tell them they're investing, but they never go visit the market. So,
yeah, it says a lot about your seriousness if you're actually spending money with flights, with hotels, and the rental car, and your time actually meeting with people. And so, you know, let people know, hey, I'm coming in from out of town. This is a business trip, and the business is to meet you. And so I'm serious about this. Let's do it. So,
and give them plenty of heads up. You know, don't give them just a couple of days. Give them, you know, 2 weeks or so, and let them know, hey, I'm coming into town, and you know, this is my plan, and I'd like to meet you, whatever, Thursday at starting at 10 a.m. And tell them what you would expect from them too. I think that's important too. Tell them what you expect. Hey, I'd like to meet you. I'm not going to buy this property, or I potentially won't buy this property, but I'd like to meet you at a property if that's okay. I prefer doing that. Or maybe you like to meet them at their office, so I prefer meet you at the office, and then we can go look at some properties if you have any available. You know.
Yep.
Well, cool. I think that's it.
Very good. Well, you know, if anybody appreciates what we're discussing here, they have some questions or feedback, we'd love to get your comments on the YouTube video or on the Facebook channel. And be sure to give us a 5-star rating there on Facebook and on iTunes.
Yeah, and subscribe too. It's subscribing and ratings and reviews help just build our brand and keep on getting more listeners. So if you like what we're doing, subscribe.
Sounds good.
All right, John, you have a fantastic rest of the day. Make every day a Saturday.
Me too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity and properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.